Than Blue by Willis and Shante. Welcome to the Coon Rhyme Report, coming at you live from Skid Row Studios. May the peace and blessings of the life-giving creative spirit be upon you and upon your family. My name is Melvin Ishmael Johnson, and I'm in the studio with my co-host, Earlene Anthony. This week on the Coon Rhyme Report, I am delighted to have with us in the studio a hidden artistic treasure in the downtown and surrounding areas of Los Angeles, truly a dramatic enunciator, Dr. Mongo. We also have with us in the studio, we're delighted to have him, the producer, writer, Kevon Guillory. He's working on a new movie dealing with Compton, California, and he's going to tell us about it in the last portion of our show. And then in the latter portion of our show, we will be treated to a sounding off open mic performance by Jamal Asalam, Andrea Ross, and Dr. Mongo. I'd like to start with a short talk with Dr. Mongo. Dr. Mongo, welcome to the Coon Rhyme Report.
Well, thank you very much, Ishmael.
Now, before we get into a discussion of you and your artistic form, I would like to take a little time and honor the birthday of Malcolm X. He was born May the 19th, 1925 in Omaha, Nebraska. I want to take some time to talk about the importance of Malcolm X, what he was trying to achieve, and then later on in our roundtable discussion, we would deal with the question of what did Malcolm X mean to each one of us. Now, I think it's important to understand two separate aspects of the life of Malcolm X if we're going to understand and utilize his teachings correctly. First, the Malcolm X who was an intricate part of the Nation of Islam, and the Malcolm X who was expelled by the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and separated himself from the Nation of Islam. Dr. Mongo, can you comment on that?
Well, you know, one thing I liked about Malcolm X is when he decided to go before the United Nations and declare that it was not about civil rights, but human rights. Mm-hmm. Because civil rights is something that is given to you by government, so to speak. Human rights is something that's given to you from the Creator.
Mm-hmm. Right to be a human being, yes. Like what Malcolm
used to say. And treat it like one.
Mm-hmm. Now, how about the two different aspects of the life of Malcolm X? You know, the one when he was involved with the Nation of Islam under Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and the one in which he was expelled and separated himself from it. Any comments on that?
Well, being expelled from the Nation of Islam because of the statements he made was a very bad mistake on the part of the Nation of Islam, because it was exactly what Malcolm said.
When the chickens come home to roost,
you know. Mm-hmm. So it was a factual statement. If you read any of the biographies on Kennedy, you will see that he wasn't the pristine person that he was made out to be. He was very flawed. He, his brother, and the head of the FBI at that time. Terribly flawed.
Yeah, J. Edgar Hoover.
Yes.
Now, also, you mentioned early when I talked about the two sections, you see, you can actually break it down into four sections. You want to comment on that again?
Yes, well, you know, we must remember that Malcolm was a product of the environment when he was a pimp, et cetera. He lived the way he had been raised to live in Detroit when he was called Detroit Red. And then when he was penalized by being thrown in prison, he learned. He didn't just sit back and rest on the laurels of being a pimp. He started reading in dim light, and he was enlightened. And he was further enlightened when he returned to the streets and got into one of the best movements at that time. I don't think the Marcus Garvey movement was still in prominence. And then moving away from there, like I said, when he made the statements about the chickens coming home to roost, being expelled from the Nation of Islam, and getting into another phase of humaneness before the wanting to go before the United Nations and declare human rights.
Now, a little later on, we're going to get into, in our roundtable discussion, we're going to talk about Malcolm a little more. Before we leave and get into a discussion, I want to talk a little about the Hoover memo. Now, the Hoover memo was a memo that came out about 30 days before Dr. King was assassinated. And Hoover sent this out to the most of his trusted FBI agent. And mainly what it dealt with is to prevent the rise of a messiah who could electrify the black militant masses. And in that memo, he mentioned Stokely Carmichael. He mentioned people that would aspire to the throne that Malcolm had left behind. He mentioned he thought Elijah Muhammad was too old for that. He mentioned Stokely Carmichael. And then the one that he really thought was a threat was Dr. King, that if he ever changed his tactic in terms of that. And hey, less than 30 days later, Dr. King was assassinated. And also, we had talked in some of our early discussions, too, on how Hoover used the Marcus Garvey movement, the Universal Negro Improvement Association, to study that movement and develop the tactics of infiltration and disinformation that became the COINTELPRO program that he used to even use it today. He really used it on a lot of the gangs and stuff and split them up into a lot of sectors. Using it in Chicago because there's a brother there, Fred Hampton, that they looked at him as being a threat also. You want to come mention a little on that? Talk about the Hoover memo?
Oh, yes. You know, strangely enough, I wrote my thesis on Martin Luther King, the dual aspects of Martin Luther King. J. Edgar Hoover was a very smart man. He realized that King was, Martin Luther King was in fact a Mark Anthony appearing before the Senate, so to speak, to give praises to Caesar. Now, you know the story. I've come here not to praise Caesar, I mean, to praise Caesar, but to bury him. And Martin Luther King, though he preached Gandhian philosophy and nonviolence, in actuality, he was addressing a younger group of people to a situation that they would that they found intolerable, like in Chicago, other places, New York. Turn the cheek. If you see a police hit your mother, don't be offended. Turn the other cheek. And this left a lot of black people inflamed. And this is why mostly when Martin Luther King came into an area, there were riots that followed.
He spoke
with a, so to speak, a two-edged sword, a two-edged tongue.
Okay, we're going to get into that now, roundtable discussion, so we can get everybody here involved in it. But Dr. Muller, let's talk about you for a while. Tell us about your roots and how did you get into writing and performing?
Well, actually, basically the church, number one, and then a period of incarceration, the two of them. And so basically, my roots can be traced to the church and to different penal situations.
Now, is it something about when a person is incarcerated, the matter, is it the fact that they had a time on the hand, they be moving so fast when they're out here in the world, and then when they incarcerated, they have a chance to reflect, and that leads to a lot of great writers that write from the inside. You know, we're talking about George Jackson, who produced some extraordinary work from inside of the penal system. And so did Marcus Garvey. A lot of that never came out also. What you think?
Well, I don't know about today, but mentioning George Jackson, yes, during that time, during the 60s, when one was incarcerated, they sought a means to better themselves as individuals, as revolutionaries, as people wanting to, you know, bring about change. There wasn't a thing at that time, I don't believe, as Crips and Bloods and Paiutes and et cetera, et cetera. You know, I came up during a time where there were gangs too. But yes, to answer your question, back in my day, anyone incarcerated, they felt that they had an obligation to better themselves educationally. And many of them, many of my friends attended schooling, college, during their incarceration and after their incarceration. I can't speak of how many are doing that nowadays.
I can. I'm one of
them. Go ahead. You want to say something about it?
I graduated in college. I graduated from college in prison. You know, and it depends on your mind state. You know, because there's going to be older brothers that see something in you or don't see nothing in you. If they see it in you, like Asante and Matata saw it in me, that's who gave me books. That's who said, you know, before I give you this, I'm going to give you this. You know, and they wanted book reports. They wanted you to be able to articulate what you read. And I started going to prison in the 90s. So it's still happening. It's happening a lot less than when this brother was doing it, because I think a large majority of the brothers had a military mindset back then. You know, now it's scarce because we're so divided. You know, the Hoover Memo worked. You know, we got chopped up into little bitty pieces. Even even the Crips are chopped up into a thousand little pieces. You know, that's why we can't get along.
Good comment.
I'd like to add right there too. I'm proud to be sitting here with Brother Kayvon. So many brothers have been incarcerated. Didn't take the opportunity, like you were mentioning, in regards to Malcolm X. Malcolm studied and became a wonderful orator through his studies in prison. He read the dictionary backwards and forward. He knew words that Walter Cronkite didn't know, you know what I mean? He was out there, and so I applaud this kind of motivation, this kind of self-discipline that you acquired.
That's what it is. It's self-discipline. You, when you decide you're sick and tired of being sick and tired, it becomes easy.
Great state. Dr. Mungo, let's talk about a dramatic enunciator. Can you talk a little about that art form?
Okay. Enunciator is someone who reads with the this visceral effect instead of necessarily, it doesn't have to be cerebral. I can think of quite a few people. Paul Robeson, for one, he was really a hell of a enunciator. I think of others like...
Isaac Hayes.
No, Ozzie Davis.
Ozzie Davis.
Yeah, Ozzie Davis.
My hometown of New Rochelle.
You know, people like that. You know
Vincent
what I mean?
Price.
And, yeah, Vincent Price, and then you had Richard Burton and a few others.
Yeah, Roy Andrew. Yeah.
But, you know, quite a few.
James Earl Jones.
Oh, my God, don't mention him. One of the greatest.
Let me get your thoughts on Skid Row. You know, Skid Row, you know, it's like the sore spot of Los Angeles, our second largest city, you know, in the United States. And then also to be known as the homeless capital with so many people laying up in the streets and stuff like that. And I know you lived in the area for a long time. What are your thoughts on about what's happening in Skid Row?
Well, it would take hours, you know what I mean? But try and summon it up, what is happening on Skid Row is what the powers that be perpetuate what they want. They want dissension. They want corruption. They want people against each other. One of the biggest drug places on Skid Row is right across from the police station, mm-hmm. as many people know. It's the police drug place, and if you want to go there and buy drugs, you know, and I'm talking about crack cocaine, you go there. You you can only buy a dub or an eight ball or et cetera. But
right there,
right there. But the police will look for people just walking down the street and busting people with maybe a nickel or something like that when quantities is being sold right across there from the street.
Let me ask you this, and what do you think it take, you know, average person, if you was giving them some advice how to get up out of Skid Row and get into some housing?
Well, you know, not so much housing, but knowledge. I would tell people just to get the hell from down there and maybe 2 or 3 hours a day. Go somewhere else. Go to anywhere else but Skid Row.
Get out
and
of
see
there.
How other people are living and what other people are doing. Go to parks instead of the parks that they have on Skid Row, like
St. Julian.
Yeah, you know, they're
Gladys
nothing.
Park.
Yeah, Gladys Park and the one there.
St. Julian.
You know, they're nothing but prison dormitories.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
one way in and one way out.
Now, we also have Jamal Absalom in the studio with us. We heard a little from him a little earlier. He's known as the in-house poet. Jamal, what are your thoughts on what's happening in Skid Row? What do you think about Skid Row?
Very similar to Dr. Mongo's. Definitely try to do a lot of work around community organizing with L.A. Can. Our friend Belial down there, Pete White. We've known them since the 90s. You're talking about Skid Row, right?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, because there's a lot of things we can need to talk about in regards to Malcolm, but mm-hmm. definitely we, you know, try to reach out to identify more so, I think, those who have medical needs and separate them from those who are the predators down there mm-hmm. Or down here. I fear more for the predators than for the people who have handicapped for various reasons.
Mm-hmm.
The security of Skid Row for women and children. I mean, that's what the Nation of Islam is supposed to be patrolling the streets, reaching out to the brothers, sisters, and anybody who has needs. Mm-hmm. That's one of the things
that they used to do.
I grew up as a fruit of mm-hmm. Islam. I grew up, you know, reaching out to our community, cleaning it up, patrolling it, you know, making sure it's secure. So I do that naturally wherever I go.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we were prepared.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking about when I was coming up, not only did we feed younger people, which they adopted, you know, Black Panthers used to feed children before they went to school, so they wouldn't squirm around, right?
Yeah.
And So, you know, we used to do that. And
great, bro.
when I was in the 7th and 8th grade, and then we got to studying, one of the great things about the Black Panthers is that they were showing us martial arts, how to defend yourself without a weapon. This is very important for a young man today. You're not going to be able to defend yourself.
Okay, mm-hmm. We'll be back to it. Mm-hmm. Okay, now, Dr. Mungo, can you do a piece for us before we take a break for the community count?
Okay, this is a piece I normally don't get a chance to do. I seldom get a chance to do, but it's about Katrina, and we know what happened in Katrina. And this is a very culturally diverse poem as it hits the whole facet of Americana, and it kind of smacks at what I call, why I call myself a reportage poet. I'll try and rush through it a little bit. I was there when the words came down the pike. Evacuate, evacuate, Katrina's coming. Get out of Dodge. The pronouncement prompted an exodus where throngs of believers took to the sky, highways, freeways, and back roads. By all means necessary, posses of evacuees tightened ranks, shifted gears in survival mode. Packed themselves into minivans, SUVs, stage coaches, and covered wagons, manned bikes and motorcycles, and made a hasty retreat from the Crescent City, the Big Easy. Ignored the upturned thumbs of carjackers posing as hitchhikers, and they dealt with the carbon monoxide and gridlock. The oracles had spoken, ABC, CBS, NBC, CNN, WPAP, UPL, Reuters, NYTLAT, the mouthpieces of mainstream news, from Media Olympus, haters of blacks and losers, tossed Natalie and Cindy aside like flimsy rag dolls and extolled Katrina. Evacuate, evacuate, clarity, clarity, all was clarity. Hunker down and die was the mode, or leapfrog over the dead and dying. Questions taxed my mind, not so much of Katrina, but the 1803 purchase, the Napoleon Jefferson connection, signed, sealed, delivered, land sold and brought from the Mississippi to the Rocky Mountains and from Canada to the Gulf of Mexico, sold $15 million for a mere 317-year-old, a nation unto itself in a bowl below sea level, an acquisition of mulattoes, creoles, octorons, quadroons, and poltrons, acquired the French tongue, pidgin, ebonics, voodoo, hoodoo, superstition, and Mardi Gras, gumbo, Cajun, jambalaya, King Oliver, Kid Olry, and Old Hickory Jackson, and the thieving Huey Long. Questions, doubts, hopes. How high is the water, Mama? 4 feet high and rising. 5 feet high and rising. The walls of Jericho were breached. Casinos and churches surrounded by a moat, body and debris all afloat, 6 feet high and rising. Water, water everywhere, and not a drop to drink. Children waded in the water, adults holding babies in possessions, waded in muddy waters, no bridge over troubled waters. ACs and TVs, power lines and traffic signs, surfboards and skateboards, tampons and condoms, vomit and feces, toilet in the rising waters, water, water everywhere, and not a drop to drink. More so than her elder siblings and those under incubation, Katrina was mean-spirited, irascible, incorrigible, temperamentally tumultuous, unpredictable, a robust tropical storm whose full-blown strength commandeered the swirl of whirling winds. dared Neptune and that old man River to impede her advance as she stormed ashore. How high's the water, Mama? 9 feet high and rising, 10 feet high and rising, 12 feet high and rising. Many rendered powerless, rowed, rowed, rowed their boats packed with knapsack dreams, wearily, wearily, wearily. Life split at the seams. Water, water everywhere, not a drop to drink. Afloat, rats and roaches, cats and dogs, magnolias and seaweeds flooded the house of the rising sun, Blueberry Hill in Ward 9, adrift, Tom Sawyer and Huckleberry Finn down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico. Yes, I was there when the words came down the pike, evacuate, evacuate. Katrina's eye is on us. And I was there when the entrance beside the golden door of the super amphitheater closed, refused the tired, the poor, the huddled masses, the wretched refuse, the homeless refugees exiled to highway ramps and rooftops to wave the red, white, and blue, dingy sheets and crayon signs begging to be rescued by any means necessary. Vigilant watchers through anguished eyes look for chariot buses and iron horses, look for UFOs and whirly birds to Lord Jacob's letter, pray for Moses to part the waters, lead them to Noah's Ark and La Amistad, safely home, out of harm's way. Yes, water, water everywhere, and not a drop to drink. Yes, I was there when the words came down the pike, help is on the way, and heard desperate inquiries, how long, how long? And the repeated answer, not long. Not long. Keep the faith, baby. And help came. National Guardsmen, hardened combat troops, some from Fallujah ready and armed to the hilt. Tanks and Black Hawks circled the super amphitheater for unknown, unidentified snipers, looters, murderers, and rapists said to have existed by the media merchant spinning half-truth from Media Olympus. Yeah, you know, ABC, CBS, NBC, NBC, agenda-driven, truth and fact distorters, propagandized sensationalists, hypocrites. Yes, I was there when the words came down the pike.
All right, Dr. Mungo.
Hi.
Okay, I think we got a call on the line right quick. Who am I speaking with?
I'm calling with information about this coins and stuff that's going on. Is this a book I'm hearing?
It's part of a book, and you're getting ready to be hearing another author, Yvonne, will be speaking in just a minute. What's your name?
My name is James. I want to speak to the book author.
Which one, Yvonne or Dr.
Yes,
Martin? Okay, Yvonne.
Yes, sir. How are you, man?
How you feeling, bro?
I'm good. I'm doing well.
Since you're the book writer of Just Like in Compton?
Yeah, Just Like Compton. That's the name.
Yeah, all the people that you named in the book I was raised with. I'm a former United States Marine. I was raised in the neighborhood. George Jackson, Tiki Baby them are related to me.
Okay.
All the people that you named, you left some out that did a lot, too. The Otto Johnson, Ray and them. The southern part of the Black Panther Party, which no one really talks about, and I think you did a good book to identify the black people who represented the black men at that time and the way society back then was set up for today.
It's set up the same way, bro, except now we don't have those leaders.
Well, the thing of it is, see, they took the chains off of our legs, but they haven't took it off our brains yet.
Exactly.
We haven't got it off.
Exactly.
You know, and you're trying to reveal that to the world, and we got to wake up sooner or later, my brother, you know. And you know Bird. I know you know Bird.
Why not? Hey, you know, the attitude I have is, why not us?
Yeah, come on with it, because why not us? I mean, we've been here the longest. Why not us?
All right. I mean, reparations coming out of different
You got
form.
A great book, you know, and I hope that you, you know, will write another one like that.
Yeah, it's coming right up, bro. As soon as we shoot this movie, that's next.
Yeah, well, Andrea Ross is my best friend.
Okay.
That's you know, right, and, Mr. Gordon.
And, this is Mr. Gordon from the last
yes,
time.
That's
she right.
She's over here
yes,
by
sir.
Me.
Yeah, I remember
yes,
the, sir. I remember the Marine.
Yes, sir. There you go, sir. Thank you, sir. Thank you, sir. I need to really talk with you on the program, too, good sir.
Yes.
About veterans and boys and girls clubs. But Miss Ross, you know, she's a great friend, my brother, and you got a great person in front of you that you would just truly love to get involved with. I've been with her for 8-10 years, and she's a grand person.
Yeah. Well, stay listening to the program tonight, because we're getting ready to get into the interview with Kevon right now.
Yeah. But Kevon, you just keep pushing, but I remember you, sir. I remember
okay.
you on 62nd and San Pedro. I
okay,
remember.
Bro. All right. It's me.
Thank you, Mr. Gordley.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Hey, Miss Andrea, you have a nice interview. My computer's down. All the computers up north are down right now.
That's all right. But, we still got much love for my desktop.
But I know you there, and I thank the radio station for allowing y'all good people to be on there to wake the world up about the world situation and who are some of the great players, black players that was in the movement there. There's no movement no more. Everybody's about the money and not about our people, and that's where it's not right.
Okay. Thank you very
much. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Go on, have a nice evening.
You
I'm
too.
Trying to get my computer going.
Bye,
get James. Another call.
Okay.
All right. Okay.
All right.
Now, let us take a break for our community calendar, and then we'll come back and talk to Kevon.
This is our community calendar for the month of May and June. Thursday, May the 24th, from 6 to 9 p.m., the Veterans Community Theater Workshop. Melvin Ishmael Johnson will be conducting a free 7-week workshop for men and women who are veterans. In the workshop, you will be taught how to mount a stage play and many other aspects of the theater. At the end of the 7 weeks, there will be a dramatic performance of the play Surviving the Nickel. Also, at the upcoming Arts Walk in June, the workshop participant will perform excerpts from the play. The space is limited for the workshop to 15. So if you're interested, please contact Melvin as soon as possible. And the location is the Vortex, 2341 East Olympic Boulevard. This is at the corner of Santa Fe and Olympic. And the Metro bus number 60 and 66 stops right at the corner. Or for more information, you can call 323-850-4436. Sunday, May the 27th at 3 p.m., Drama Stage Qumran, Nasana Play Reading Series presents the first public reading of Filthy Rags, a stage play written by Daryl Phillips. And this play has been developed through the Roby Theater Company's Playwright Lab. The location will be The Exchange, 114 West 5th Street, Los Angeles. And for more information, 323-850-4436. Sunday, June the 10th at 2 p.m., Drama Stage Community Outreach Program will be passing out hygiene kits and clothing to the community. And the location, also The Exchange, 114 West 5th Street, Los Angeles. And Thursday, June the 14th from 2 to 10 p.m., this is the Art Walk that is held every Thursday of the month. And Drama Stage Qumran will be hosting the Arts Walk at The Exchange, and will be presenting live music, poetry, stand-up comedy, and much, much more. For more information, call 323-850-4436. If you have a community event that you would like announced on our show, Send the information to dramastage1@yahoo.com. Attention, Earlene and Anthony. And once again, our call-in number for the show is 800-893-9562. Now, back to our host.
Thank you, Earlene Anthony. We're back with our guest coming to you live from Skid Row Studios. We're delighted to have with us in the studio, Kevon Gully. He's the author of the great book, Just Like Compton, that he's in the process of producing as a movie. Kevon, welcome to the Qumran Report.
Thank you, everybody, and I'm happy to be here.
Now, can you tell us a little about your background and how you ended up writing Just Like Compton?
I'm a product of the 80s, which, you know, you guys know very well, will make me probably a grandma's baby, you know, because our parents were either participants or victims of drugs, you know, either or, you know, I don't make excuses for people, you know, So I ended up with my grandmother. So I'm one of those generational where I grew up with my grandmother. So I'm a grandma's baby. There's a lot of us, you know, A lot of us also ended up in the system. Foster care, group homes, because a lot of their grandmothers couldn't handle us. You know, they had raised their kids already. So here, you know, you had a woman that was born in 1919, you know, that raised her children. And then here you got this crazy 12-year-old coming in our house, you know, with a whole different set of rules. So I ended up in the system. Juvenile hall, group homes. And like I said in my book, in the epilogue, you know, the foster care system's preparatory for the juvenile hall system. Juvenile hall system's preparatory for the youth authority system. And youth authority system is preparatory for you know where. So I graduated in steps, you know. I wrote the book mostly out of anger, you know, and some boredom, you know. And I felt like there had to be a book done by somebody that did it, not a lady that grew up in Iowa, then went to UCLA and decided to write a book about Compton. You didn't live it.
Exactly.
You know, so you can't speak about the hunger. You know, or the problems with the Hispanics, or having to walk through three neighborhoods to get to school and then three neighborhoods to get back. You know, you can't talk about this stuff because you didn't live it. You can interview me and then repeat what I said, but you didn't live it. So that was why the book was born.
Okay. Now, how about the process, you know, the screenwriting and the directing and the development of the movie? How did that come about?
That's a very strange story because, I mean, please understand that I wrote this book for the homies. You know, nobody else. I wrote the book for the homies. And the book ended up taking off. The first 30 days the book was out, I was in 5 newspapers. And they were more curious about my backstory, of course, than the book. So I have, you know, read the book. Don't fall in love with me. Fall in love with the book.
Yes.
And so when they read the book, you know, I was in more newspapers and I got ended up on KGLH on Dominique DePrima's show a couple times and doing other big things. One of the teachers, who I didn't know was a teacher at the time, he got a hold of the book. And he talked to me about using it possibly as one of his course texts and at the college, at Compton College. And Dr. Ikewebo Bunting ended up doing a foreword to the academic edition of the book. I went and did a whole another edition. You know, I added a glossary and he did a foreword. And I added an academic matrix in the back to make it teacher friendly. You know, because like the lady coming from Riverside don't know what Su-Woop mean. She don't know what a crab is.
True.
So I had to put that stuff in the book.
Break it down.
Right. I had to put that stuff in the book to help her communicate with the students. And it's revolutionary for them because now they get it versus before they didn't get it. And the greatest compliment I've ever received in my whole little tenure as an author is Dr. Bunton said he finally got his entire class to read a book from cover to cover.
Wow.
And it was that one.
That one.
Yeah. Now, how have the book been received by the homies?
They love it
because
they can read it. They know the streets. They know the people. They remember some of the incidents.
Yeah.
You know? So it's nothing like reading about your own. You know,
exactly.
If the sister right here happened to write a book and then you happen to read it, you're going to be happy about it. You know, my folks wrote that. Well, my folks happen to be a whole bunch of people because out of my 35 years, I spent 13 and a half of it in prison. So I got a whole lot of friends.
Let me ask you this. How do the Compton that you grew up in compare with the Compton of today?
It's actually better today.
Better.
And I say better now because the black and brown problem. I don't really address the Crip and Blood problem because it's really kind of non-existent. You know, you got Crips killing Crips and Bloods killing Bloods now, so it's not really a red and blue thing anymore. People mm-hmm. don't. You got to be in the streets to know that. You know, we don't worry. I'm more worried about my homies than I am about the Crips.
Mm-hmm.
But the biggest problem, and you know, from 2005, 2006, Compton had the highest murder rate in the nation.
Yeah,
it was black and brown. It wasn't Crips and Bloods.
Mm-hmm.
So bad that the Compton sheriffs had to come in.
Mm-hmm.
They put the Compton Police Department out of business and brought in the sheriffs because the Compton Police Department couldn't handle it.
Now, the black and brown problem, you think that has a lot to do with the economic system or the what's happening inside of the penal system that comes back out to the community?
This is what happened. I'm going to tell you what happened verbatim.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody that's really important in the Hispanic community, as far as the gangs go, wrote a letter. The letter hit the streets, and it forever changed Compton.
Mm-hmm.
I can't repeat what was in the letter,
mm-hmm.
but trust
mm-hmm.
me, that's what changed Compton.
Mm-hmm.
And they're smart. Make no mistake about it. When I say they, I'm talking about the Hispanics.
Mm-hmm.
They're not killing us anymore. Now they're breeding us out, and they're buying us out.
Mm-hmm.
You have the old black man who sold his barbershop, well, now they turned it into a panderia, and now it's a Mexican bakery.
Mm-hmm.
They bought the shop next to that and the house on the corner, so now all that's Hispanic. You look at the demographics, Los Angeles is now dominated by the Hispanic. Not a bad thing, but that is the truth.
Mm-hmm.
It used to be predominantly African-American.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now we have become the minority, and it gets worse. What's beautiful about the Hispanic now is that if you walk outside your house, wherever you live, you'll see a group of Mexican kids and black kids together with their skateboards, with their skinny pants on and all that. That's good. It warms my heart to see it. Neither one of them have a rag.
Mm-hmm.
His uncle can't poison him and tell him don't play with that mayate,
mm-hmm.
which is, you know, the translation for the N-word.
Yeah.
He don't want to hear that because Jamal is his friend. They walk to school every morning.
Mm-hmm.
We couldn't do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so these kids are coming up now to have a better chance,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I love it. And the N-word is no longer a black word. I looked out my window the other day. It was five Mexican kids saying it, you know. it's ugly, but it's beautiful because now it's become a black, a ghetto thing, not a black thing.
It's not mm-hmm. a color, but it's right. a kind.
Like Northern California, mm-hmm. they share the ghetto, mm-hmm. the Norteños. They share the ghetto.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't have the Crip and Blood problem, what they do now, but overall, they share the ghetto, like we used to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when we had the Brown Berets and the Panthers had the same ideal,
mm-hmm.
you know? Mm-hmm. Now, my generation got poisoned. We poured the ink in the milk, and I was part of the problem. I didn't help it either. You know, because I was poisoned by the people that told me that mess. And I told it to somebody else. The kids now are like, we don't want to hear that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that makes it a lot better.
Great, great. So you see some kind of alliance for the future.
Yeah.
The community.
The future is much brighter.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Because, you know, I came to Los Angeles when I was in the Marines and I think 1969, 71, during the Vietnam period. And the thing that I used to always wonder about coming out here and thought that it should be pushed is why African-Americans never picked up the Hispanic language. Because I saw that you speak Spanish, French,
and
English fluently.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But French, I grew up speaking French.
Yeah.
You know, I'm Haitian Creole, and my grandmother didn't allow speaking English in her house, so you ain't had no choice.
In the book.
But, right, I had no choice. But Spanish, it's a weapon, you know?
Yes.
And once you understand that, you use that weapon, you know? And I'm a favorite when I hit prison yards. They're like, oh, good, he here. You know, now they can't say certain stuff and get away with it. Mm-hmm. Well, they've got smart, just like we got smart. Well, we said, well, you know what? We gonna speak Swahili then, you know? Since y'all want to say stuff that we can't understand.
Yeah.
So we started teaching ourselves Swahili.
Right.
Okay, so what they did was they switched. Now they speak Navajo. You know, seriously.
The Native American.
It's warfare.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so now we have to go buy Navajo books on Amazon to figure out what they're saying. Because he can walk right by and say, stab him in the face, and you ain't gonna understand what he's saying.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They learn Swahili. I know Mexican gang members that speak Swahili better than people in Africa.
Mm. Interesting. Yeah. Interesting.
It's warfare.
Wow.
Okay, now we also have Andrea Ross in the studio with us. She's over here real quiet, and she would be performing a piece for us later on, but she's also part of the movie that's coming. Can you tell us a little about your involvement, Andrea?
Well, it all happened on the 20-year anniversary of the L.A. unrest and Kevon was a guest there, and our paths intersected. He saw a picture of me, a headshot, and he's like, wow, you kind of look like my grandmother. You know, you got that blue eyes and that Creole look. I might be able to work with you. And the rest, as they say, is not his story, but her story.
Yeah.
So I'm working hard on my grind to try to interact and be a part of this great venture of Kevon's, and I'm looking so forward to it. I'm very excited. And I must say, for one that read the book, I couldn't put it down. The only reason I put it down is because I had to sleep. Other than that, I would have read the book in one reading, but it took me 2 days to read it. And when I tell you people in the listening audience, go out, grab this book. A lot of it is about the area that I was in for 26 years. Carver Park, 118th Street. And I just, everything, I know people in the book. And much more than that, it's like a guide for those that don't know. Well, now you will know. And on the cover, he says, the names have been changed to protect the guilty.
What I'm going to do is...
Great book, you guys. Yeah. Go out and read that book. Get that book.
What I'm going to do, I'm going to get up to S1, have it all sold out.
Everybody sold out.
Yeah, I'm going to have...
No books
sold out?
Everybody sold out.
Good for you.
S1 carries it.
Yes.
But the only
have to order.
Mm-hmm. You can get it right now. It's on Amazon or BarnesandNoble.com because they're all sold out.
Yeah. Wow.
To go get me a copy.
Good job.
And read
I called and nobody has books.
Yeah.
They're like nagging me to death. I'm like, you guys got to wait. I can't give them to you until I get them.
Got to read.
That's always good.
Now, Andrea, this is an appropriate time for you to do your piece, What's Real. Once you do your piece now, we'll move right on.
Thank you. Okay. My name is Miss A.D., formerly out of the NYC. Now I'm coming at you from L.A.'s infamous CPT, getting ready to drop a trilogy of social commentary, otherwise known as What's Real. And I am telling what's real. I ain't telling no lies because it's a day-to-day struggle in this ghetto. Here's why. Man, child born to an underage mother. Before he got her name, the little kid, he got a number at a county office in that welfare line. Mama sits all day for pennies, nickels, quarters, dimes, board waiting till the whole day is through. The social worker thinks she got nothing else to do. Mad stories told on 1,004 faces. Futuristic slavery of the minority races. Chained to a system that is bound to fail, but you don't give a damn because your check's in the mail. But it's mental. G-E-N-O-S-I, you know the deal. I ain't telling no lies. I'm simply telling what's real. The man got a plan. Black mind kill, I ain't telling no lies. I'm simply telling what's real. I'm telling you what's real. Miss A.D. spelling to Y-O-U and you what's real. So check it out. I be speaking it, be teaching it, be preaching it, be because it's so real. Telling to you, spelling to Y-O-U what's real. Now check it out. Her child grows up, he wanna be a man. Age of 9, a Mac-10 in his hand. He ain't seen his daddy since he was 3. Don't even know that fool's name, but they spell it T-R-E-E. The story goes, tree was tall and he was stout. Yoked up, tatted, ripped, knocking enemies out. Devastating on a trigger, twist, peel your cap, send you straight to your grave for your R.I.P. nap. But late one night in that hood of South Park, pop, ring out in the dark. And tree got off a couple, but he was overmatched. Just like that, his life was snatched. Now his mother's left here, burying her son. Another tragedy, but only one of those scandalous tales yet to be revealed. I ain't telling no lies. I'm simply telling what's real. I'm telling you what's real. Miss A.D. is spelling to Y-O-U and you just what is real. So peep my game, because I be addressing it, be professing it. Be confessing it, be cause it's so real. I'm telling to you and spelling to Y-O-U what's real. Look what happened to him now. His childhood is lost. That's the number one fact. He's fronting gangster style. He don't know how to act. Instead of games like hide and go seek, gaming was ditching school 5 days a week. Heated, hanging out on the block scene, pants sagging low. Yo, he trying to be mean. He want to be tough. He want to be bad. Want to have things that his daddy never had. rope chains, dope chains, Versace, Vuitton. But where, oh, where have those simple days gone? Jackin', illin', then chillin', almost killin', on the run, lyin', cryin', inside dyin', dyin' to be. Way back when he stood 1 inch from his mama's chin, because now his lesson is learned the hard way. He's locked down. He's doing time day by day. 10 years. They stretched him out and gave him 10 years. Put them bracelets on him for 10 years. He put mama through hell, staring at her baby in a jail cell. 10 years till you know how great your freedom do feel. I ain't telling Y.O.U. no lie. I'm telling Y.O.U. what's real. The man got a plan. Black mind killing. I ain't telling no lie, people. I'm telling what's real. Thank you.
Right. Andrea Ross. Nice.
Hey, he's in the house.
Yeah. And you know this.
Okay. Okay, we still got a little time. Jamal, why don't you do your piece now? And then we'll wind down with our roundtable discussion to wind us out.
Again, thank you, Ishmael, for allowing me to come into Skid Row Studios and be introduced to my good friend, Dr. Mongo, and meeting Kayvon, and, of course, my lovely, lovely, lovely AD, Sweet, and Miss Erlene. You guys, this is a treat. The poem I like to read is called Lake of Fire. The sin where we begin, never mind a pig foot and a bottle of gin. And God said, throw him into the lake of fire. And quick as a wink, deeper into the brink, the sadness and despair singed all bodily hair. And yet deep down, like dolomite in the pressured ground, when stuck in the fire, cleansed of all carnal desire, the clay men break, the straw men burn, and we count the lesson is learned. The lake pours in all majesty. Call clearly to your own destiny. Be forward and foretold. God's word is good as gold. And then make no foolish mistake. As sure as the California earthquakes, this lake of fire, this fire of lake, will take your eternal fate. So my children, heed my word. Sure as cool waters, and God bless the fools, for life has many doors and consequences. Be careful what you choose.
Right. Word.
Jamal Asalam. Okay, we got a call online. Who we have online?
Hello?
Hello. Who am I speaking with?
This is Charlotte.
Okay, Charlotte, do you have a question for one of our guests?
Is Andrea in the house?
Andrea's here.
Andrea,
you have a question
is
for?
In the house. Miss Charlotte, what's going on, girlfriend?
Hey, queen.
Oh, got it. What can I do for you?
I'm just calling to send my love and shout you out and see what's going on.
Hey, well, I'm in the studio with all these fabulous, fine people here, and I'm being enlightened, and I'm hoping that you will come out, and when we have a book signing for the Just Like Compton book, come out and patronize the book. It's a very dynamic project that was going down with Kayvon, and I hope you'll be a part of it. And thank you for calling in.
Yes, I will, Drea. You know I will. Always full of support. I just want to let you know that from that day I met you at that poetry event, and you blessed the audience with that poem, Word Hole, I knew you were someone to connect to.
I said, this woman
got game, and I'm about to be on her team.
All right, I'm taking application for all players, and I'm not mad. Thank you, boo.
That's right. All right, so I just want to let you know, congratulations on all your success, your future success, and I want to let everybody know that even when she speaks, she hits you with that rhythm and that rhyme time after time after time. And I love it.
All right. Thank you so much for calling in,
okay,
Charlotte.
Okay, Drea. Love All you. Right. Have a good night.
You Thank too. You very much for calling in.
You're oh. welcome. Oh. Peace and blessings.
Thank you. Okay, we're winding down right now. I think we just might have a little time to go around for some comments. Kayvon, what are your plans? What are you working on now? I know you're writing. The writers is always right.
Yeah, we start shooting a movie trailer early June, late May. And We're going to screen it. So I'll make sure you guys get tickets to screen it. We're going to screen it at the Bridge. You know, it's going to be a really big deal.
Wonderful. It's a shooting location in Compton?
It's all over. The book is titled just like Compton, but it takes place all over Los Angeles. Yeah. That's where I happen to be from.
Yeah. Okay. Looking forward to it.
I'd like to just say we have to embrace brothers who come out and, you know, make some kind of contribution, explaining their experience. This is their voice. This is their time. You know, I'm out the game, but by the same token, I applaud you trying to encourage other people to pull back, to use their time wisely. Again, Malcolm X is who I point to all the brothers that I meet, who have been incarcerated. He used his time well there. I have a nephew right now who's facing life, and I encouraged him a long time ago. I said, listen, you can go there, but as long as you're living and breathing, opportunities can present themselves in ways you never imagined. So, brothers, keep working on yourself, your own self, and make yourself a great person or a contributor to the society.
Brothers need to let go of the crutches. Get off the crutches. Mm-hmm. You know, stand up and be grown. Mm-hmm. You know, stop looking for excuses.
Okay.
You know, that's what I mean by the crutches, you know. Let them go.
Yes.
And this is exactly the kind of voice we need to hear.
Exactly. I agree with
you
that.
You saw the need, and when I was asking you before, you saw the need, and that was your niche.
Right.
That was what your answer. You're filling in the story that was missed.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been living in Los Angeles since the early 90s, and I'll tell you, you know, I know brothers who are out of Compton, and they told me, man, I never went to sleep a day in my life without hearing gunshots.
Mm. Okay.
So,
Dr. Mongo, and what's so beautiful about this is that he was, in fact, he's a modern day Malcolm X, so to speak, as far as I'm concerned, because here's a man to giving away his food or portions of his tray so he could have some paper to write on. Yeah. And, this is like Malcolm X, man, by the dim of the cell light or whatever. Yeah, he was straining his eyes. And here's a man, he's giving away food and writing and remembering.
Mm-hmm. Trading food for paper so he could finish this book.
And not losing your mind, your mm-hmm. beautiful mind, brothers. You have a mind to fight, to learn languages, to fight this, on many levels.
All right. Okay. Now, I would like to thank you. I would like to thank my guests very much.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Great.
Now, I would like to extend a special thanks to our in-studio guests, Dr. Mongo, Kevon Goley, Andre Ross, Jamal Asalam, and a special thanks to Jeremy, Sonia, Nicholas, and the Skid Row Studio.
And Earlene, Anthony.
Yeah, of course.
Of course, Earlene.
Goes without saying.
Now, you can check out our past shows of the Coomround Report on iTunes, Facebook, Twitter, skidrow.la, or www.dramastage-coomround.org. Thank you for tuning in to the Coomround Report, and I leave you with the song that opened the show, Darker Than Blue by Willis and Shantae.
Great show.
Yeah. I got to read. Are we gone?